Welcome back. And let's see. What am I going to talk about today? The moon is waxing. We have equinox coming up on Saturday. Marks the beginning of spring. It's beautiful. It's beautiful here. Spring is my favorite season. So we get all the wildflowers and everything comes up, literally comes up roses. And so the equinox is when I didn't realize this. So I was just looking this up. I know that it was, you know, it's halfway between the solstices and it marks the first day of spring. But I guess I just wasn't intellectually aware that the equinox, for the equinoxes, both of them, the day and the night are the same length all over the world. So everywhere that all of us are coming in from, on the equinox, the day and the night will be the same. That's really interesting to me. It may not be interesting to other people, but all over the world, that's pretty cool. So just thinking about the new life, all the brightness of spring and renewal and, you know, emerging from our cocoon of winter and dream time and coming to me, it reminds me of simplicity. Just spring, so beautiful and so simple. Just that simple beauty, that brightness, like the smile in our meditation. So I'm kind of acclimatizing to this this new sense of lightness. You know, hopefulness. I keep forgetting that it's there. You know, there's this story. Some of you may have heard it. It's about an elephant. It refers to an elephant. There's a man who's walking in a wood or something like this, and he sees an elephant tied to a tree. He's tied to a tree by this very thin rope, very small, by his foot. And he wonders why the elephant doesn't just break the rope and run away. You know, why is it the elephant, this very teeny rope? And elephants are just massive. I mean, they're just massive creatures. You know, it takes nothing for an elephant just to, I mean, they can take down trees with their trunks and they're just huge. So this little teeny rope. And he sees a man who is the elephant's trainer standing not too far away. And so he asks the man, you know, why is the elephant staying there with this little tiny rope? Why doesn't it just run away? And the man tells him that they train the elephants from birth, from when they're little, with the same rope, and they never change the rope. So the elephant just believes that he can't break away, that it can't run away. So I feel a little bit like that, like reminding me of that story. We need to remember that we are elephants. You know, we are elephants. There's nothing holding us to that sense of, you know, I feel like I've just been in conditioning around anxiety and there's nothing holding us to that place of despair. There is this liftment that is on the horizon. So I just want to remind us, you know, we are elephants, at least as we begin to exhale. Yeah. So remembering to come back to the body. Come back to mindfulness, to what's actually here in this moment. So in honor of springtime, in honor of just coming back to what's actually here, I think I thought I would keep it simple for us today. And I want to talk about wise mindfulness. I know that you all have been, or Grace has been discussing the Eightfold Path over the recent weeks. And so I thought I would talk about wise mindfulness, this thing that we're doing, you know, mindfulness, this practice that we keep coming back to again and again and again, mindfulness. Very simple, but this is the thing. This is what we're doing. So I wanted to mention the Dhammacakkhapavattana Pavatana Sutta. And that's the sutta, we know it very simply as the Buddha's first sermon, or the Four Noble Truths. It's the turning of the Dharma wheel, is what that Dhammacakkhapavattana. So the Buddha's first sermon, Four Noble Truths, is a distillation of that sermon. And the Noble Eightfold Path, of course, is the fourth truth. I want to show you some images of the Dharma wheel. And Tolan has some here. Let's see. These are, you can see it has eight spokes on it. There are many different, the Dharma wheel actually precedes the Buddha of our time. So you might see them sometimes with a different amount of spokes, but the Dharma chakra has these eight spokes you can see. And let's see the next one. There's some very beautiful ones. This one's from China. I love this one. You can see how beautiful. So it represents the Eightfold Path. Each of the spokes is a different element of the path. And I think I have one more slide. This one's beautiful. This one has the deer. Because the Buddha gave his first sermon in Deer Park. And so that's what that represents. The turning of the Dharma wheel. When the Buddha spoke, when the Buddha taught, decided to teach after his awakening. So thank you, Tolan, for the images. So each of the spokes represents one element of the Eightfold Path. And I'll just read them. We have wise view, wise intention. And you'll hear people will say right or wise. Some folks, traditionally it's right. It's right view, right intention, right speech, whatever. Some people will say wise because, there is no right or wrong. There's just a wise relationship too. So you'll hear it both ways. I tend to say wise. So they are wise view, wise intention, wise speech, wise action, wise livelihood, wise effort, wise mindfulness, and wise concentration. So apparently, if we develop, and they're not linear by any means. If we develop these attributes, these elements in our life, this is the path to awakening that the Buddha has laid out. So wise mindfulness, coming back to basics. What is mindfulness? What is this thing that we're doing? What is it anyway? We all know it's the constant engagement of present moment experience. It's, in simplest terms, it's mindful of what you're doing. This is aware of what you're doing, of your surroundings, mindful of what's arising in the body, in the emotional body. It's getting real with your life, with what it is that you are experiencing, walking around as a human in this rare and precious life. Mindfulness is a tool, and it is a tool that helps us to unearth Dharma, and Dharma being the truth. Dharma being your understanding of the truth, things as they are, things as they have come to be. It helps us to discover what's actually going on, and seeing beyond our beliefs, and seeing beyond our emotions, and seeing beyond our stories. Mindfulness is this tool that helps us to unearth all of that. The place where we begin that engagement of our present moment experience is the body. This body right here, arguably, as I mentioned, the body encompasses the whole of our human experience. Nothing that we experience in this life. If you find something that you've experienced that didn't come to you through the body or through one of your senses, tell me, because I want to know. The Satipatthana Suttas, the sutta, it's a discourse around the four foundations of mindfulness, and it begins with the body. And then our feeling tones, and then the mind, and then the dhammas, or phenomena. And the Buddha lays out some of his dhammas, or his dharmas, you know, things that he has understood, seven factors, the hindrances and the aggregates, and so on. So those are the four foundations of mindfulness, starting with the body. So beginning to understand or ascertain the truth of things so that we might live with greater freedom or with more equanimity in our lives is very simply wise view or seeing clearly. Seeing clearly, you know, the truth of our lives. Sometimes, like a good example I like to use is conflict. You know, we have conflict with colleagues, family members, neighbors, whatever. You know, it's a really good example, because we can almost touch those feelings, those sensations, and a lot of the time, these things will arise, and they arise out of story. They arise out of delusion, and so wise viewer, clear seeing, the truth kind of frees us from that delusion. When we get real with what's really going on, we can also see what's really going on for our neighbor. We can see their suffering, or our family member. We can see, and what arises at that point is more clear, is an appropriate response. So it begins with wise view, and the beginning of wise view is cultivating mindfulness. It's that tool, that gathering tool, gathering the whole picture. To recognize this moment accurately with wise understanding. So you can see how these begin to become related. And so through this process, we can free ourselves. We free ourselves, our hearts, our minds, from a lot of the entanglements, the delusion and confusion that we can become so mired in. And so when we can see the whole picture clearly, or gain clear understanding through mindfulness, an appropriate response is more likely to follow. And this is part of a karmic relationship or unfolding that ultimately leads to more and more freedom. When we, you know, wise action, wise livelihood, all of these ways that we interrelate as we unfold our lives in this way, you know, we condition the next, we condition the next unfolding in our lives, and we will. It does ultimately leads to more and more freedom from immense. And so, if we are interested in co-creating and manifesting the world we want to see and live in, first got to be aware of what's happening right here, of our own mind states. And we've got to address and tend to our own hearts, our fears, our anxieties, and our suffering. And how many of us have had thoughts or emotions over the past few months or a few years that we're not proud of, you know, or that didn't resonate with our character? Yeah, definitely. Sometimes emotions arise, and we, you know, thoughts will arise. And they're not in alignment with our heart intention. You know, gee, I would never wish such a so-and-so to get COVID, you know, those kind of thoughts, you know? So it's been an intense time for our emotional bodies. And, you know, people running around without masks or whatever it is we think about. And there's, so there's lots to work with, to say the least. And so related to karma, you know, we are in the midst of this of karma unfolding. This moment, this very moment. Karma, sometimes we think of it as an abstract thing, you know, that rewards us or punishes us or determines whether we come back as a mosquito or as a princess or a queen. But, you know, imagine for a moment that karma is just, we're just sitting in the middle of karma right now, this moment, unfolding. And how we interrelate, how we relate with one another impacts that unfolding. Every moment, our thoughts, how we act on them, our feelings, how we work with them, how we develop them. You know? It's a dependent co-arising. Every arising circumstance has a cause and effect. And so it affects and impacts us in some way. And so we will form a feeling or a perception, and those formations become thoughts, and those thoughts become intentions, and they become manifest. And so these actions condition the next and create the circumstances for the next, and so on. And that's how we create our lives. That's how we create our world. That's how we do it, guys. The great samsara. So the first step in working toward the world we want to live in and engaging our practice to that end is to work towards becoming more fully aware and to be mindful. So we commit to gathering the whole picture. I gotta tell you, if it's a negative circumstance, if something has arisen, I'm not referring to people's health or anything like that, but in our emotional bodies or some type of a conflict, it's usually rooted in delusion. Mindfulness isn't present. Mindfulness isn't present if those things are arising. So commitment, it's a commitment to gathering the whole story seeing clearly our own tendencies and conscious or unconscious. And so aware that anger and violence arise from suffering, hatred arises from suffering, aware that even those whose views we oppose suffer. So I want to share with you one last thing here, and this is around the seven factors of awakening. And so mindfulness plays a central role here, and you can see this slide. So these are the seven factors of awakening. And you can see that there are arousing factors of investigation and energy or effort, joy and rapture. And then there are the calming factors, the calming qualities of tranquility, concentration, and equanimity. And mindfulness is in the middle. Mindfulness is how everything begins. And so these are not necessarily linear either. But I want to just describe each one a little more fully. And we start with mindfulness. And this can be in our meditations. This can be even when we are exploring an intense emotion. We start with mindfulness. And mindfulness typically will lead to investigation, right? Investigation, those feeling tones or whatever it is that we are paying attention to. And so with investigation, there's an interest, right? We are interested in something, and sometimes especially in meditation, it can become kind of a womb-like attention. You know, when we were just very interested in something. And that investigation just sort of naturally helps us to cultivate energy. The energy just arises. When we become interested in something, there's an enthusiasm. And so the energy will arise when we become enthusiastically interested. There is an actual energy that will arise, and many of you may have experienced that either on retreat or during long periods of meditation, or sometimes people when they practice metta practice for an extended period of time, they'll get this. And what tends to arise in the body is this sense of joy. And sometimes it is called rapture. You'll get piti in the body. You can actually feel it. I remember the first time I had the experience, I went to my teacher and I said, oh my gosh, you know, what is this? What is happening? I just felt like I was walking on clouds. And it was stayed with me. It stayed with me for several days. And I had this joy, and it was just a spontaneous energy in the body. And so typically in meditation, it's really easy to want to hold onto that, or even in our daily lives, if we are practicing a lot of metta, or we want that feeling, we want that sensation, and we tend to cling to it. So it's really easy to do that, to try to make it stay, but it will pass. It will pass away. And so if we are just open to what is present, it will pass away, and a deep tranquility may arise. And through that tranquility, we can gain a sort of a collected mind, or referred to as sumadhi. And and a deep concentration may arise. And from there, a sense of equanimity just open to whatever is arising in our lives and arising and passing away. And so we develop this relationship. And so it's said that if you are feeling a bit sluggish or sleepy or groggy or not enthusiastic about your practice, to practice with the arousing factors. And if your mind is jumping around a lot, you're finding it difficult to focus or concentrate, is to focus on the calming factors or to develop the calming factors. But we start with mindfulness. We just begin there, and we get interested in whatever it is in your experience from day to day. So I just wanted to bring that in, because those factors can be really, really powerful in your practice. So I want to save time for us to have some dialogue. I'm going to leave you with a couple of things. One is, I'm going to read this. This is from Thich Nhat Hanh. And he talks about the energy of mindfulness. He says the energy of mindfulness will protect you. The energy of mindfulness is something concrete that can be cultivated. When we practice walking mindfully, our solid, peaceful steps cultivate the energy of mindfulness and bring us back to the present moment. When we sit and follow our breathing, aware of our in and out breath, we are cultivating the energy of mindfulness. When we have a meal in mindfulness, we invest all our being in the present moment, and we are aware of our food and of those who are eating with us. We can cultivate the energy of mindfulness while we walk, while we breathe, while we work, while we wash the dishes or wash our clothes. A few days practicing like this can increase the energy of mindfulness in you, and that energy will help you, protect you, and give you courage to go back to yourself, to see and embrace what is there. So I love that. Simple, but it's what we're doing. The nuts and bolts of what we're doing is this mindfulness. And I'll read you one more. In honor of international, we're coming to, I guess we're still in the middle of Women's Month. I wanted to read you something from the Terigata. Terigata is a collection of poems, 2,500 years old. They are some of the only works that are included in the Pali Canon. And I believe it's the poems from 78 Buddhist nuns. And I want to read you one. This one is called Dantika and the Elephant. We started with elephants, we'll end with elephants. And it's a poem. And it comes to us from the time of the Buddha, 2,500 years ago. And she says, Dantika says, coming out from my days abiding on Vulture Peak Mountain, I saw on the bank of a river an elephant emerged from its plunge. A man holding a hook requested, "Give me your foot." The elephant extended its foot. The man got up on the elephant. Seeing what was untrained now tamed, brought under human control. With that, I centered my mind why I'd gone to the woods in the first place. So, that, I will stop there.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.